Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from thedraftnetwork.com, along with Trevor Sikkema from thedraftnetwork.com. Trevor's on his phone, right, Trev? Little mobile office.
This is true. The mobile office, as happens every time the Bucks are on the road.
From the Carolinas, right?
I am in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. And if any of you are listening to this podcast and you live in Charlotte, you live in a beautiful city.
Yes,
this is a great place.
Yes,
you should enjoy where you live.
My dad wanted to move there. He wanted to relocate for work and move there and everything. My whole childhood, and of course, I didn't want to like leave my friends and everything. But he was always like, "We're gonna move to North Carolina. It's great." And now I'm like, "Well, weather wise, I wish we kind of would have done that." But
you said friends, like you had multiple.
Yeah, just two. Yeah, they're imaginary, but they were great.
Oh, you did have two. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, okay. Imaginary, great. They couldn't relocate, though. It's weird how that works.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow.
So tell me about this Panthers team, because the Steelers play them on a short week, and I promise we do have actual content on the show today. We're going to talk about second-year quarterbacks and the career kind of trajectories that those guys are on right now. But this Panthers team, Bucks came back on them. What's the deal here? Mike Evans didn't do anything? James Bradbury shut him down? The Panthers fans are all chirping? What's going on?
Bro, James Bradbury looked like a freaking all-star corner.
Wow.
I don't know what happened.
I feel like he hasn't been that good in his career.
Bro, I don't know what happened.
Weird.
I think in the first half they targeted Mike Evans 8 times. He had like one catch for 12 yards. It was terrible.
Wow.
It was awful.
I'm seeing like 10 Carolina, targets and one catch right now for Evans.
I gotta say though, Carolina, really, really good defensive team. Wait, I can't remember. How is Pittsburgh's offensive line?
Probably top 3 in the NFL. I don't know many people argue with that. Yeah.
Okay, then they're gonna be right, because the way that the Panthers had so much success against the Buccaneers is they blitzed relentlessly, knowing that the Buccaneers had no chance to pick it up, like none.
Hmm.
And so that's what their strategy was. They were very aggressive on defense. And then on offense, a lot of what they do is they get the ball out of Cam's hands very quickly using Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey in all kinds of different short routes and combo routes and screens and reverses and things like that. And they let the playmakers do the work after the catch, which is really great for Cam.
Keeps him alive.
Because they have that. Right. And then it also, the added bonus though, the glue of that entire philosophy is the fact that they also have Greg Olsen. And like when they need to switch it up, when the defense is keying in too much on those shorter passes, they can pop it over the top of the linebackers between the safeties with Greg Olsen, who is obviously a fantastic tight end. And so it's almost like a Carolina's perfect offense, and as well as their perfect defense right now. So their philosophy is totally clicking right now. And so the Steelers got to be on it. I don't know how that defense sounds up, that it could go up well against Carolina, but I'm just happy
either.
That we have an interesting Thursday night game for once.
Yeah, so. I feel like the Thursday night games have been okay. I mean, obviously that 49ers one kind of left a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
Well, Nick Mullins, the GOAT. So
that is true. I don't even know where to begin talking about Nick Mullins. I don't.
Dude, the Kittle throw, right?
Yes.
you know what I'm talking about? The one where Kittle catches it one-handed and just sprints up the field, right?
Yeah.
Phenomenal play by George Kittle. However, the throw, incredible.
Right, yeah.
Like, Rodgers-esque.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe anything about that game.
It was unbelievable. Yeah.
I just need another week. Oakland's a joke. I need another week of it. I hate to ask that of a man with Nick Mullins' clear talent, but I don't know if I can become a believer this quickly. Man, that was some performance. It was. Even as bad as Oakland is, that was some performance. We want to talk about quarterback performances, but we want to focus on some of the second-year guys that we're seeing around the league right now. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes, because why would you not want to start with Patrick Mahomes? Obviously, what he's doing right now is ridiculous this season. Somebody said to me today, I think my wife Britt, she said to me, Patrick Mahomes has already thrown more touchdowns this season than Alex Smith threw all of last season. And I said, the craziest part is, that's not even a knock on Alex Smith. He threw 26 touchdowns last year. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes out here with 29 now. 26 touchdowns, that's a fine season. Like, yeah. Nobody's hating on that. But Patrick Mahomes is already throwing 29, and the numbers just back it up, man. He's, I mean, like, all over the field. Like, people say, and Cal Krabs did a great job over at the Draft Network, our colleague, of writing a piece on why Patrick Mahomes was, I think, the 76th player on his board or something like that. But his valuation may have been off, but the landing spot's so big, and it's so hard to know how the player will grow. And that's why the evaluation of what an analyst says about the player in the actual report is, in my opinion, way more important than the value that they placed on the player, because that shows they have an understanding of who the player was. And if said analyst worked for an NFL team like the Chiefs, they might be able to say, okay, this guy might be here in a vacuum, but like on our team, this guy can be a star. And that's essentially what Kyle wrote in his report, is that if Patrick Mahomes lands in the right spot and gets the right type of development, which everyone will agree, even his truthers will agree, he needed coming out of college. He literally said in the report, Kyle said in the report, Patrick Mahomes can be a star. And I think that's spot on. And I know you and I were higher on him than Kyle was. I think he was in the 30s and around the 30s on both of our boards, early second round grades in a vacuum, which I don't add value for quarterbacks. So I would have said, I love that you move up for him. I thought he should absolutely be a top 15 type of pick based on the talent and the upside. But again, it had to be the right spot. And I not to say that Patrick Mahomes couldn't be good anywhere else. I just think this good, it's unrealistic to think that that would be the case in the vast majority of places around the NFL. So all that to say, don't use it to take away from Patrick Mahomes, though. You know what I mean? Like, how do you not do that? People always feel like you're trying to slight him. Like, it's not, that's all we're saying. Like, it's saying that Patrick Mahomes' best case scenario is so exciting for all of us because football is a team game. And if he were in a horrible situation, he might be crazy talented, but you need everything else to help bring you along in football, no matter what player you are. And So I think that's what's so fun about Patrick Mahomes' situation, is that he's in that spot and we're seeing peak Mahomes, and we don't get to see every prospect, especially with his talents, reach that type of potential.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, it's just like somebody was talking about last night when the Patriots were playing against the Packers. And you see a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson playing at running back, succeeding because granted, the offensive line blocks well in front of him. He's on a prolific offense. He's got Tom Brady as his quarterback. I get all those things. But you're still getting you're getting more football talent out of Cordarrelle Patterson as a running back than you ever got with him as a receiver in the NFL. And that's because it goes back to kind of the age-old thing where Parcells is somebody who said this and who kind of lived on this. When you look at the draft and when you look at prospects, you have to look at their pluses and minuses, the things they do well, the things they don't, the limitations that you can see, things that might be overcome with coaching or experience or time, all this kind of stuff. You have to evaluate all of these things. But you have to remember to emphasize, what can they do for our football team, specifically our football team? And that is such a Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Kansas City Chiefs thing, because like you just said there, Patrick Mahomes could go to maybe half the other teams in the NFL, and we're not even coming close to talking about him in this kind of manner.
Right.
But it's the fact that he went to a team that saw the things he did well and thought, look, we can live with that. We can teach him through that. Because what he does exactly well fits for us, and we can make him a successful football player because of what he does well. And that's a key thing to scouting that I lose track of sometimes. And it's, you know, it's harder for us as what I guess I would call like quote unquote national analysts, because we're grading guys as pure football players as opposed to coming up with like a big board for a specific team. So it's harder to necessarily do that. But I find myself sometimes falling in the trap of looking at a player's limitations and letting that be my basis for how I view them as a prospect. When in reality, if it's not the opposite, then you're not drafting them for the right reason. You know, like you should never be drafting a player because they, how do I word this? Like, you have less fear that they're going to be a bust. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to draft with confidence. Right. You can't draft out of like, oh, phew, now I don't have to be as worried about this guy. No, no, no. You have to be draft them because of what they can do. You have to be drafting them because of their ceiling. And
you,
so,
yeah, you have to draft. Your scouting department has to draft in unison with your coaching staff. Like, if your scouting department doesn't understand your coaching staff, and I love talking with Dan Hatman of the Scouting Academy about this. We were at Mobile for the Senior Bowl a couple years ago, and he was saying that you'd be floored at the number of organizations around the NFL that scouting department and coaching department never speak to each other. Like, they have no interaction. But New England, it's like fused, all of it, you know, which is why they have such a keen understanding of so-and-so fits perfectly into a certain role, and that's all we're going to ask him to do, period. And boom, there we go. We supplemented our football team at a low cost with a player who's fully capable of doing what we're going to ask him to do. And then they just do that all across their roster. And their scouts know exactly what types of players they want to find to make the machine work. And it just all works beautifully hand in hand. And the fact that more organizations don't do it is just insane. It's just crazy. But it is so important to draft with the idea that this coaching staff can maximize a player or can't maximize a player. So you have to go a safer route. That may be the case sometimes. Not many general managers and front offices are going to want to admit that, but that may be the case with certain teams. With Pittsburgh, for example, they have not drafted defensive backs and developed that talent well for years now. So you have to go with more pro-ready players, or you're going to keep having the same issues in the secondary. Obviously, they have a lot of the same issues. But the point being that not realizing that can continue to set your organization back, or you go out and you get a different defensive backs coach or whatever, whoever you choose to blame. But if you're looking to get players that are ready to contribute anyway, that's something you have to take into consideration as a scouting department, I think. And that's obviously something Kansas City looked at their situation. They said, this is the guy we want to build. This is the guy that's going to take us to the next level. Alex Smith's playing well. He doesn't get enough credit, Alex Smith. He's a good football player. He's just not great. He's just not great. He's not capable of the things Mahomes is. But Mahomes wasn't ready right away to be able to sit him for a year, to be able to wait and develop him and not get any bad habits and get him more comfortable with NFL speeds. And he did get some playing time here and there, which was huge. I just think you're seeing the absolute ripple effect of that, as well as Mahomes being of the exact perfect mindset to be able to sit, to be able to learn. I mean, curious and humble, but like thirsty for knowledge, but confident. That's like Mahomes' personality. It's a very... He's a different personality, really is. Like, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have some of this false bravado that some of these other guys have, but like, he's still so confident. At the same time, yet, like, you know, is like a sponge in terms of the knowledge that he soaks up. So the combination of everything in Kansas City, it's what creates situations like this where a player is able to reach their peaks. It just doesn't happen by individuals. It just doesn't. You know, as much as that may be a fun storyline to tout, that's not what football is. It's a team. It's a group effort.
If people don't realize how very real the disconnect can sometimes be between like a front office and a coaching staff and maybe even the players themselves, you know, it's kind of we are taught as young fans and old fans too in the game of football that is not the case. Like, that's never the case. Like, that they're all together and it's all one vision and one thing and all this kind of it's just the PR thing that we're all fed. And then the more I've done this as a journalist, the more I realize that it is just way more common than you think that these many elements that go into team building and team winning and all kinds of execution from the top down, there are snags and there are people that disagree. And it's not always as smooth as we think.
Right. Completely agree. We got to talk about a couple other year two quarterbacks. But first, you know, ever since we started this podcast, Trevor, people always asking us for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, we don't always know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why we always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust us, guys. They are your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code, one word. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code Locked On. Locked On is the promo code when creating your account to claim the bonus. MyBookie will match the listener's first deposit 100% up to $1,000. You play, you win, you get paid. So in some ways, Trevor, is what Deshaun Watson, this is how the question would be phrased in order to grab the ear of the listener, is what Deshaun Watson is doing in Houston more impressive than what Patrick Mahomes is doing? No is the answer. But is it in some ways, though, because his offensive line is absolutely garbage and he's running for his life and yet they've won six straight? I mean, it's pretty crazy. I know they haven't beaten anybody great, but the Texans winning six straight is wild.
Listen, man, I don't care who you are. This Agreed. Is the NFL.
Right.
Six straight doesn't happen.
And when you start 0-3, it's less likely.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I wonder how good of a – like, how close was Bill O'Brien to being fired?
He had to be close, man. If they started 0-4, 0-5 – and they beat the Colts overtime in a crazy game. Crazy game.
I don't even know about like mid-season. I'm just saying like in general, because it just feels like the defense being healthy, like certainly Watt being healthy is key for them. Mm-hmm. But I just feel
there's factors.
I just feel like Watson being such an X factor at quarterback has almost made us forget that like Bill O'Brien was basically on a train to get fired. Was he not?
I think he was. Yeah, I mean, they start 0-3. They lose to the Patriots by 7, the Titans by 3, and the Giants by 5. But you can't lose to the Giants this year. Obviously, that win against the Colts was the game changer. But that game could have gone either way. And you could easily make the argument Colts should have won that game multiple times. They won in the final seconds of overtime, 37-34, to get to 1-3. Then they beat the Cowboys in overtime the next week to get to 2-3. Then a 7-point win over the Bills, 13-point win over the Jaguars. They crushed the Dolphins on Thursday Night Football. Then they eke out the Broncos, missed a 51-yarder. That's how they won, 19-17 on Sunday. So the Texans are great? Score. Absolutely not. No, I don't. And you could see from what I just read there, they really haven't beaten anyone super impressive. Still impressive to win six straight. Does it give me a lot of confidence that this is a team that's going to, you know, live up to some of the expectations people had for them or make noise in the playoffs? No, but they go into the bye week. Then they get Washington coming out of the bye week in Washington. But I don't think that's – I know Washington record-wise is doing some really good things right now, but I think that they're still a football team with too many questions. Then the Texans have the Titans, the Browns, the Colts, the Jets – the Eagles and the Jaguars to finish the season. That's a pretty weak slate. So we could see them finish on a run. And isn't the biggest reason is, I should say, 1A and 1B, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins has been unbelievable. But Watson has just, his ability to create, he's cut down on the turnovers the last few weeks. He's making better decisions with the football. I think what you're seeing with Deshaun Watson, in comparison to Patrick Mahomes, which is fair because they were in the same class, is that Watson, in my opinion, may never have the unbelievable physical traits that Patrick Mahomes has in terms of ability to place balls in tight windows perfectly, like, you know, with the superhuman arm strength. But he's consistently making the right reads, right decisions, giving his receivers chances, and he's capable of attacking all three levels of the field, which he wasn't given enough credit for coming out of Clemson. You know, remember, that was a big concern with him. I think with Watson, if he can stay away and cut down on turnovers, that's going to be the big thing with him. He may not be able to throw for 500 yards every game and, you know, lead the team to victory like Patrick Mahomes will by putting the team on his back, and who even cares if you ever run the football. But I do think Watson's ability to escape and to create outside of structure is a perfect fit in Houston that I don't know that many quarterbacks could do what he's doing at the level he's doing it in that situation. I think there could be quarterbacks that are better than Watson that would struggle in Houston's situation, don't you?
with Watson for me coming out, and the two big years that he had at Clemson were they had those two deep runs. One of them winning a title, and then one of them coming up short to Alabama. Mm-hmm. The thing that I felt like it was just the biggest takeaway, the more that I watched Watson, is that no matter how Clemson won the game, whatever their strategy was, however big his role, he always elevated the whole offense, I thought. I thought that he dictated where the ball needed to go correctly. I thought he brought the most out of the skill positions that he had when he was at Clemson. And that was the biggest reason why he was QB1 for me. I mean, sure, like, I thought the arm strength was adequate. I thought he was fine. I knew he'd have some struggles with accuracy and some turnovers and things like that. And, you know, you mentioned it there. Was not the most physically gifted dude. But in terms of a true quarterback of the position, a guy who you could rely upon to win you games in a variety of different ways, because you and I both know wins in the NFL don't always come pretty. In fact, most of the times they don't come pretty. They come dirty. Like, you will have your initial game plan. The other team is going to mess it up somehow, and you need a guy that you can depend on to stay within the structure of the philosophy that you want to do within the offense, but you've got to find a guy who can elevate moments around them, the players around them to their maximum, all this kinds of stuff. And that's – I saw that so much in Watson. And so when he went to Houston, I was worried because, you know, that offensive line was there. I thought that he was going to get killed. I knew that he had Nuke, but there wasn't much around him still on that offense. Now – he gets paired with a guy like Demaryius Thomas. We're seeing him make up for the deficiencies of the offensive line. And I think, obviously, the production that DeAndre Hopkins has had as well, just by himself individually, that's a product of Watson's biggest trait for me. And that is that he just elevates the rest of the offense, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. I think that he just makes everything a little bit better. And that is such a QB1 quality. That's such a guy that you can have faith in, week out. Because, like you said, there's going to be weeks where Watson's not the most accurate quarterback. He is going to turn the ball a little bit over. But context, I think, is everything. It's not always just about the touchdowns, the turnovers, the yards. I think the context to it means a lot. How things happen, their role in all of it, their role in all of the outcomes. And so Watson has always been a guy I thought who could elevate it. And he's clearly doing that for a Houston team that, man, it doesn't matter who he plays. If he's not playing good opponents, okay, great. Then beat him, and they should be, and they are. Six wins in a row is crazy, I think. And so he's a big catalyst for that. I think I'm agreeing with you there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I love what you said about elevating the supporting cast around him. I think that's one of the absolute biggest things with Watson. He consistently makes the group around him better. That's what great quarterbacks do, and I think both he and Patrick Mahomes are in – that are moving toward that group. I mean, I like, obviously, I'm always about consistency and doing it for a long period of time. We've seen a lot of quarterbacks flash and then fall apart. And I mean, early on, we probably would have said Mariota and Winston were headed there, but now we'd probably say they're both headed out of there. And will they be starters wherever they end up next year? You know, yada, yada, yada. But I do think that Watson and Mahomes are on another level than those guys. And I think we're seeing that happen for both of them this season. And both look like guys who can, in their own ways, be the key catalyst for their team's success in their own ways. And not many quarterbacks, I think very few quarterbacks, can that be said about in today's NFL. So both looking like big hits. The guy that they wish out there was a big hit, and I don't know what to say yet because the Bears are 5-3, Trevor, but I don't know, man. Like, I'm trying not to be results-oriented in my analysis, but Mitch Trubisky just doesn't look good. He doesn't look comfortable.
I tried to tell people, man. I tried to tell people, even during the Bucs game, he wasn't that good. The Bucs defense was just that bad. And if you look at every other game Trubisky has had this season, the Bucs game is an extreme outlier to his to skewing his statistics positively.
Yeah, and even if you look at the tape of that game, dude's running wide open all over the place. You couldn't miss him if you wanted to.
Correct. And the thing with Trubisky is, like, are we calling him a bust? No. All we're saying is the dude's got some ways to go. He really does. Accuracy is one of them. That's a big one for me. He was missing wide open dudes in the early parts of the Bucs game before the Bucs defense just completely gave up and made it easy for him, especially with his legs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, accuracy was a big one, and then seeing the field more. I think recognizing where guys are going to be open quicker and just being able to see full plays as opposed to locking onto primary reads, that was a big thing for me. I thought that, you know, if he doesn't have to, those things working, he kind of panics a little bit, and that's all part of the growing process. But it always hurts when there are quarterbacks in your class, especially quarterbacks who were drafted after you, that are progressing mm-hmm. further, that are making sure. The headlines, all those kinds of stuff. And so I think we got to be fair a little bit. Certainly it's how many games he started. I mean, not that many so far in his NFL career. Right. So still young, still getting it down. But I'm with you. Trubisky still leaves a lot to be desired right now.
Yeah, I mean, he was on a UNC team that was obviously good for UNC, but he's never really been on a team where, you know, he could really be maximized. So, you know, no disrespect to some of the other guys, but like, Trubisky started 1 year in college, and he was in a horrible situation picking up midway through the year last year with Chicago. And with, I mean, they were awful in every sense of the word. The offensive line was beat up and injured, which normally would have been one of the strengths of the team. They couldn't run the football. The receiving group was easily the worst in the NFL. Are any of those guys even back this year? Bellamy, I think, is like the fifth string wide receiver. I know Kevin White was hurt last year, so he wasn't even. They went out and got four top skill guys, you know, that they were going to run on their offense because last year's group was just so miserable. So hard to evaluate much about him last year. He certainly wasn't horrible last year, although I wouldn't say he was good either or even like really encouraging. This year, I think he's just been like, okay, like that's it. Like there's not much signs of growth with him. The mental processing is slow. He will get panicky and jittery in the pocket. There's some games where he's just taking off every play, just can't wait to run. And he's not staying disciplined in the pocket and going through progressions. And the other thing you mentioned was what concerns me. The accuracy just doesn't seem to naturally be there for him. It comes in flashes for sure, but I don't see a lot of that natural accuracy with him. And again, it is harder for him in the public's eye because he will always be compared to Mahomes and Watson because the Bears traded up for him. Mahomes and Watson were traded up for as well. The Bears traded up for Trubisky when they could have taken either of those guys right where they were at. So obviously all of those moves, the trade up and the fact that two quarterbacks that are clearly better than him right now went after him, is kind of warping the Mitch Trubisky evaluation in the public's eye, where some people are just like, this guy sucks, which is too far. But he hasn't been good this year either. And I know the numbers and the Bears record will make people want to kind of say, oh, well, that's not true, but he hasn't been good. Like, if you watch the tape of Mitch Trubisky, you can see there's a lot that he leaves to be desired. Doesn't mean he won't figure it out, because I think Matt Nagy is doing an unbelievable job there. So it doesn't mean he won't figure it out.
He's good. He'll be good for Trubisky, I think.
I think he will be. Right.
I really do.
That's the thing with Trubisky. What I like about the situation is that from an evaluation standpoint, we are going to learn about Trubisky. Yes, give him till next year. That's fine with me. But we're going to learn about Mitch Trubisky. We're going to learn whether he's good or not for sure, because he's got a good OC. They've got talent all around him now. That offense is loaded with talent. He's one of the best protected quarterbacks in the league. If you look at Pro Football Focus's numbers, he's almost always throwing from a clean pocket. Hardly ever is he bothered in the pocket. The offensive line and the protection schemes have been great for Chicago. The issue is Trubisky. That's been the issue this year. When that offense has struggled, he's almost always been the main issue for that. And so we're going to figure out, can he maximize that offense, which is what a quarterback drafted in his position should do. Even if he isn't Patrick Mahomes, that's okay. Can he maximize that offense, or will he continue to be one of the things holding it back, I think is the big thing. Nate Peterman. Do we want to talk about Nate Peterman?
What's your talk about, man? 95 passes, 11 interceptions.
Dude.
Every 9 passes he throws is a pick.
It's unbelievable. Do you see today or yesterday?
Every 9.
7 picks on the year already. I know we're box score scouting here some, and some of those picks are not his fault, but the dude is just he's a machine of intercept. Is he the worst quarterback in the NFL?
Yes.
Any string?
Yes.
I'm trying to think, man. Ryan Lindley ain't in the league anymore.
He's not the worst,
He might be.
But he is the most detrimental. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds like the worst.
All right, then he's the
worst. I think he's the worst. He's terrible. He can't play. He's got to be cut. I mean, if you're the Bills and you're serious about this, and I know obviously with Allen's injury, there's only so many moves they can actually make at the quarterback position. They should have made more before the season, but they can't really like cut him tomorrow, but they should.
If you had to start one of these QBs, if you had to start one of these QBs to get a win, I was going to put some stipulations on it, but I couldn't think of any. I don't know. My brain just like stopped working. Sure, who would you start?
There. Okay. Who are the three? Is there three?
Nathan
or is there more?
Peterman.
Okay, Peterman.
All right. Yeah. If you choose wrong, aliens take over the world.
Wow. Okay.
Nathan Peterman.
Big decision.
Johnny Manziel.
Wait. In any state, or like, because Johnny, I felt Manziel failed more because of off the field stuff. Oh well, we'll never know. I'll take Manziel for sure. We'll never know what Manziel could be on the field. He wasn't like horrible on the field. He just hardly ever was.
He wasn't good.
He wasn't good.
Did you see him throw? What did he throw? Like five? What did he throw? Like five picks in his first Canadian game?
He is horrible. Well, he said straight up he never studied tape or anything. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Can't succeed in the NFL like that. Come on. So, I mean, like, if it hadn't been for all that stuff, Manziel might have been talented enough to make it. We'll never know. You know, we just have to put a big unknown on that evaluation. But, talent-wise, I'm going with Manziel for sure. I just – what does Peterman give you? What was the allure with him? And I know he wasn't even drafted high, so I feel like I'm – but the Bills, what did they see before the season? Like, is he just, like, really a nice guy and, like, studies hard? I mean
– bro.
I've heard he works hard, so
the Bills were in the middle of a playoff.
Yes.
And they willingly put Peterman in.
Yes, over Tyrod, who is also bad, but not as bad as Peterman. Not even
Tyrod
close.
Is way I am not on team Tyrod is bad. I'm not. So you won't get me to that point. But he is way better than Nate Peterman in every facet of whatever you think of Tyrod Taylor.
Yep. Completely agree. That's when
McDermott lost me. That's when McDermott totally lost me.
I kind of agree. I mean, I guess I get going to a spark, but I would just hope you'd know your personnel better. Now,
no.
I leave some room for maybe Peterman really was just awesome in practice and then just – never realized he would melt down in a game that badly. But, I mean, it's understandable. But
now we know.
Now we know. Now, unquestionably, we know. And the Bills have no choice now, which is why it's so freaking funny. Because, I mean, not that you want Allen or Anderson to be hurt or anything, but they don't have any other options. And they did this to themselves this preseason. They had the worst quarterback room in the league. You and I believe they drafted the wrong quarterback in the first round, and now here they are. And you're seeing all the quarterback situations in all those teams we talked about kind of dictate where the teams are headed and how they've at least looked. I know the Bears' defense is playing great, but it just makes you wonder, man, when they get to the tough matchups, the real tough ones, how are they going to fare in those kind of games? I really, really wonder that about the Bears. I tend to agree. I know we'll have some Chicago fans after us. I think they're headed in the right direction. I love where they're headed as an organization. Just don't think this is the year. Don't think they're there yet, despite the 41-9 win over the Buffalo Bills. Trevor, tomorrow we'll talk about draft prospects. We'll look at some of the standout performances from this past weekend. We'll look ahead on Wednesday to the college football games coming up and an eventful weekend. Thursday, obviously, of course, we will be doing our NFL predictions as we always do. And Friday, we're going to be joined by the Draft Dudes for a little super show podcast here on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I will be gone next week. I'll be on vacation in Disney, living it up. Ben Solak will be on the podcast in my stead with Trevor all week. So it's going to be a fun time on the podcast. Just want to getting everybody
just
prepared
for it. Unsubscribe now. Jeez.
I'm going to tell Ben you said that. Well, he's actually going to hear it. He's going to hear it.
Yeah, he listens. Yeah, big fan of the pod.
He listens every morning. Yep, can't wait for the Slack channel tomorrow morning. Going to be fun. But yeah, just wanted to prepare all you listeners for that event. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Obviously, as always, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.